Hi, welcome to the DeviantArt Podcast. My name is Matt Buholtz, and today we are joined by Ross of Rostras. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I love being able to bring you into the new office. This is the first time getting to see it.
My God, this is mind-blowing. I've never, because I've seen the old office for 8 to 9 years.
Yeah.
And to come in this for now, I feel like you guys went off to college and just graduated and then got your big boy job. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. For those of you who have seen it online, there's a lot of nice wood. There's some beautiful living moss walls, which we can't touch.
Oh, really?
You can't touch it? It's the hardest part of my job is not touching the moss walls.
Why?
I don't know. I was told not to.
Oh,
yeah.
I might have touched some moss.
Oh, no. We'll erase that part of the podcast. No evidence. So to get things started, where can people find you online?
My hashtag is @RossDraws. You can find me anywhere, DeviantArt, Instagram, Facebook. YouTube is my primary platform.
Something just happened on YouTube for you.
Yes.
Spill those beans.
I just reached 1 million subscribers. Woo! On YouTube. It's been crazy.
That's awesome. 1 million.
1 million? Oh, I can't even process it yet. It's 1 million people.
So yeah. That's insane. Gorgeous. And you got your plaque. You got the little,
I did.
The button.
Yes. I've had my gold plaque sitting in my place, mailed up, not opened. And then I think yesterday I wanted to unveil it on camera with my fans. Uh-huh. And so I unveiled it and I was like, oh my God, it's a gold plaque. And it was really emotional seeing it, cause that's 4.5 years of hard work, the grind, the hustle, and to receive that as hey, you did it kind of thing, you know? And it's I feel mentally, after 1 million, I don't care anymore. It's first it was after 100,000, it's okay, cool, but we're grinding to 1 million, and 1 million is much tangible than 10 million. That's the next plaque.
Yeah.
And I don't care about 10 million. I'm 1 million seemed a good number for me to go. I feel I've made it. I think you did it. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, to get you warmed up, let's go through some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So fun thing about these is people online can submit these questions and it just goes to a future interview. So if you want to submit some questions to be asked in our rapid fire, just put them in the journal below or on the YouTube comments below or wherever you are watching or listening to this below. And we may ask them in a future interview. So these are some real fast ones.
Okay.
First thing, top of your head.
Top of my head, okay.
Favorite color?
Cyan and pink.
That's two.
Yeah, but the color combination, I use it in every painting. But if I had to pick one, cyan.
Good choice. If you could be any animal, what would it be?
Off my head, a wolf, maybe.
Nice.
Yeah.
If you could choose a nickname, what would it be?
The first one that came, it was given to me in high school.
Okay.
It was Rossi Poo. And that came to my head. And I was top of my head, it was Rossi Poo. It was given to me in high school. I don't know.
What was your favorite Halloween costume ever?
Simba. I was kindergarten. It was Simba. And I loved being a lion thing. And so my mom.
Do you have a picture of you being lifted?
No, I don't.
You are adult Simba. You are cool Simba.
Yes, I was cool Simba.
How about describing yourself in 3 words?
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
And fun.
There you go.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are a great three. And finally, pet peeve.
Milo hair is everywhere.
Milo's hair everywhere. Dog shed.
Yeah, no, I know. Every
it's
morning
tough.
Is just I have to clean up the studio, let out my little Roomba thing, mm-hmm. right? And I let it out every night, and it come back with a handful of Milo hair. I'm like, how is this possible?
Yeah.
It's been on, the last week, it's been on 20 rounds, mm-hmm. and every time it's full. It's Milo hair everywhere.
It's crazy because I have a dog that sheds as well, and it's just this is a full dog of hair.
Exactly.
Where was this prior, and how are you the same size now?
My thoughts.
Well, now that we're through the rapid fire.
Yeah.
Now the easy part. Tell us about your journey as an artist. Where did you start? How did you get to where you are now?
The whole journey. Wow.
I told you the easy part now.
Oh, yeah. No. I always loved drawing as a kid. I think I'm an only child, mm-hmm. and so I love to get lost in my grandma's backyard, like coming in and then drawing things I've made up in my mind, you know, like the world and characters. So I had a lot of imaginary friends, a lot of imaginary characters that I love to like bring to life. And so I think my love of drawing came from there. And my family came from a very stricter household. Like my dad wants me to be like a doctor, you know, engineer and stuff like that. But I always loved to draw. I was like a, he didn't grow up the same way I did. And so he didn't know how to like navigate that. He's like, oh, my son had a love for drawing, but I don't want him to kind of do that. And so he was raised very strictly. And whenever he saw that I'd draw, like after a certain point, he would punish me. Like I was like 5 or 6 and it's like you should be not anymore, which was
okay.
Yeah, no, it was tricky.
Yeah, that's gotta be really tough.
Yeah, no, I had to learn how to like my primal instincts kicked in very early because I had to kind of be on the lookout for like, because our primal instincts, like when we're in danger, they kick in like fight or flight or something like that. And so I had to kind of sneak around how I draw, like in school, I had to like on desk, stuff like that. But sometimes I would draw my homework and then get home and he would see it and he would punish me for it. And I was like, damn it. And it was hard growing up and I fell out of love with drawing. I like, this isn't fun. Like it's fun for me, but it's causing me too much punishment. And so I just focused on like math and science and stuff like that. And then it's not until my parents divorced when I was like in 7th grade is when my dad moved out of the house. And I was like, wow, like I can draw again? It's weird, because tapping back into trying to draw again after being punished for stuff like that, it's like, it feels a little like I'm learning how to draw again, learning to have fun, learning who I am. Right. And so I would draw like a lot now. I would start drawing again, I was having fun again. And so it like sparked a curiosity. And I learned out like you could do this for a living. I think I was like 15 or 16. I was like, wow, like what's concept art? I had no idea. But since my dad moved out, I can learn and like research, like, oh, illustration, what's that? You know, comics and stuff like that. And so I researched a whole bunch of like programs and schools and try to find like, how can I get back into this? I didn't know even like comic illustrators existed. And so I researched and went to my school. It's the only school that I wanted to go to and the only school I applied to. And my mom was like, please apply to more schools. And I was like, this is the one school I really want to get into. I don't want to go anywhere else. And I got in, which like thankfully, like, oh my gosh. And she was so happy. She was like, oh, I can't believe my son's going to college, you know.
What school was that?
Art Center College of Design. A lot of people ask me that. And I feel like I influenced people's decision to go there, but I just want to publicly say the time that I went to school is much different from where it is now. And so I don't know what the quality of the education is now, but I would do your own research before going there, because I get a lot of emails saying, hey, I just got into Art Center because of you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ah!
Yeah, wow. And all education like ebbs and flows of, you know, changes over time. So it is important to do that own research because,
yes,
like you're saying, you did all your own research at that time and really put in that work. So that's the key learning for people is like, find what works for you.
Exactly. Yeah. So any future people that want to go to Art Center, just do your own research.
Yeah.
I got into that school and I was 17. I moved to LA and I was like, whoa, I'm actually kind of doing it, you know. Just studied a lot. I grinded, put in the hours. I made sure that I'm here because of, like, you know, I want to put in the grind, the hustle, and learn as much as I can because it's expensive. It's really expensive. And I think but at 19, I got to work on my first movie. I designed a main character for a movie. And the movie's called Earth the Echo. And that was a really unique experience. Disney owned it at the time. And so I was working at the Disney office and I was 19 and they called me up to the executive's place and they wanted to show me the 3D model of my character. And they're like, Hello, Mr. Ross. Do you have any feedback? And I'm like, I'm like a sophomore in college. What do you want to learn from me? I don't know. And so I kind of stood there. I didn't know what to say. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it looks good, I guess. It looks kind of cool. And then my production designer came in and was like, okay, let's change this, that, that, that. I'm like, okay, thank God.
Right, yeah. Like, how do you even know what sort of feedback
I have
you're
no
able
idea.
To give? Like, that's so intimidating.
Right. I've never really given, like, feedback. And this is a professional. I think Disney probably paid them, like, I don't know, millions of dollars to, like, do this. And I'm just like, I don't think I'm right now in the mindset of giving you guys good constructive feedback. But that was surreal to kind of, like, it came out when I was, like, 20, 21. And I'm driving down, seeing billboards. I was like, oh, my God, that's so crazy. But being at the studio, even though I loved it, I feel like I was almost, like, destined for more. And I loved working it, but I wanted to – I feel like I thrive best when I'm in my own creative world, my own characters, and bringing that stuff to life. And people love the studio life. I think that's not me. And so I quit art. I dropped out when I had one semester left. There was one semester left of school, and I was like, I'm not fully happy. I feel like this art route is kind of handed to me, and I want a challenge. I've never been truly, truly challenged in life. And so that's why I quit art to do acting. I always love to express and emote, and I thought like I could be a really cool actor. And so I had no idea where to start, but I was like, you know what? This is my journey. This is my adventure. Screw it. I dropped out, moved to LA. My mom was like, you have one semester left. Just finish it. I'm just like, I'm not happy. If I do it, I'm not going to be happy. I'm following my heart, Mom. Remember what I told you? The one thing I told you in middle school is to just trust me. I know what I'm doing. And she's like, okay, I guess, whatever. So I moved to LA in a studio apartment, and I literally went on Google, how to become an actor in LA. That's what I typed. I was like, I don't know where to freaking start. And so I was like, these are all the acting, like George Clooney acting school, Brad Pitt acting school. Where do I start? But all I had was a studio apartment, like a bed and a computer and a lot of drive. I was like, I'm going to do it. Like,
yeah.
That's my only kind of language and output. If I don't believe in myself, then, you know, who else can believe?
Yeah.
So I went and looked at people's kind of school history. I went to improv. I went to, like, acting school, blah, 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 blah. And I had so much fun. I feel like I'm not, like, when I started in art, I felt like I had a following-ish. People kind of knew who I was. But when I did acting, absolutely no one knew who I was. I was ground zero, doing it for myself, and I'm learning the most about myself because it was legit a hustle and legit, like, a challenge. I had to, you know, pay the bills and stuff like that. And my mom was paying it at the time, so I had to, like, I know that I probably have a one-year window to make it happen. And if it doesn't happen this year, then I have no idea what to do. And so I tried every day for that 1 year to try to make it. And I went out on auditions. I made cold calls. I did so much to try to, like, you know, become it. And then I think a year and a half into it, I missed art again. And it was like, man, these are my two passions. I don't know what to do. And I think I was the most lost in life at that point. I missed art. I'm out here in this studio apartment, like not making it as an actor, but I love to act. I don't know. And so I spent a week in my room playing with a different, like, actually, when I was that lost, I called my mom. I'm like, Mom, I'm really depressed. I have no idea what I want to do. I feel like I'm stuck in my life and I have no direction. But can I please get a Wacom Cintiq? And she's like, what's that? And I'm like, it's like a drawing tablet. And she heard drawing and she's like, yes, because she knows that I love to draw. Ever since I was a kid, I love to draw. She's like, yes, I'll get it for you. And I'm like, thank you so much. I'll pay you back one day. I have no money, but I'll pay you back. And so she got it for me. And I spent that week in my room playing with different camera angles and playing with lighting and video concept because I was like, maybe I should start a YouTube channel. I feel like it has my art and it has, like, me, like, wanting to, like, you know, make people laugh into one. And so I just spent a week trying to try different things, and then after that week, I published my first YouTube video, and ever since that day, everything changed. It just felt like my life went 360, and all my friends on Facebook, like, Facebook was hot at that time, and they were sharing it. They're like, oh my gosh, Ross draws, what's that? Da, 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 da. Look at this crazy guy being crazy, but drawing and having fun. And they're like, please do another video. And I'm like, okay, sure, yeah, let's do it. So I spent another week doing another video, and they're like, oh my God, this is so cool. Oh my gosh, please make another one. And I was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm having fun. I'm making people laugh, and I'm drawing. This is what I want to do, but I'm making no money. And so what do I do? And so I opened up a Patreon, and thank God for Patreon. It just, like, really helped me start my career and letting the supporters who love what I do support my craft and my journey and my adventure. And that's when I got paid to do what I do, and then I remember, like, my grandmother is my best friend, and she recently passed away, and her big wish was that I would graduate college. I'm her first kind of grandchild. And so after my YouTube channel was, like, going, and then I was like, I want to go back to school and finish with my grandma. And so I went back to school, and I had to juggle, like, my last semester with YouTube, and it was, like, crazy, but I graduated. And I just went into my channel full time. I thrived on it. I got a dog. I was like, I'm an only child. I want a dog. And so I got Milo, and it was like one of the best days of my life, just holding him. He's so cute. And I'm like, this is mine, you're mine, me and you forever. This is, you know, yeah. Like, this is a commitment. And
yeah.
And now my dog's like my best friend. And I'm so happy that I made the decision to get him. And so I was doing my YouTube thing for a bit, but I think every creator goes through a journey where, like, oh, we got to get our numbers up, right? We got to, like, get more followers, or we got to, like, do more, da da da. And I definitely felt that. I felt like an empty grind in a way. Like, what am I doing this for? I feel like I'm trying to grind to get followers. That feels empty, or grind to, like, I don't know what I'm truly doing it for or if it truly made me happy. And so that's when I realized that I wanted to create my own world. Like, I feel like I've been doing fan art videos and stuff like that, but I want something out there that people can hold and open and experience. Like, this is Ross's world. These are Ross's characters. And I was like, that's the moment where I realized I really wanted to resume Nima and make a Kickstarter for her. And it was literally like me dropping that whole mindset and switching to, I'm going to do what I love, make my own world, and there's a chance people will not like this, but it's mine. I love it, and that's the only thing that matters. And I launched the Kickstarter for it, and it was super, oh my God, it blew up. Oh my God, that's crazy. The Kickstarter went really, really well, and I got scared a little bit because I'm like, wow, now I owe these people a book. And I'm not anywhere near done. But I knew that if I just put it out there, and like, to see the support is like mind blowing, it could really, like, hey, you're doing the right thing because you're following your heart. And so I spent the last few years trying to make it perfect, and it got changed a lot here and there, but it's so close, and I see the vision for it. And it's crazy that when you start following your heart, everything falls into place. So, like, the million subscribers, I was like, oh my God, this and that. And just everything starts to feel right. And, like, that's been the craziest part of my journey. Like, I always believed it, but I never, like, maybe truly absorbed it until it happened to me. And so I was just trying to follow my heart and my vision and my dreams of making it happen. And I feel like next year the book finally comes out. It's 2020. I feel like 2020 is my year, you know, like, clear vision, clarity, the book comes out, and then we're going to pitch it to make it into an animated series, and so, like, we're just gearing up for that, and I'm super, super excited.
Yeah. So I do want to dig into this book,
yeah.
And, like, let you talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
So it all centers around Nima.
Yeah.
Who was one of your, like, original characters.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Nima and, like, how you came up with her and, like, yeah, how she's evolved over time.
Right. So back in school, there was a project, and it was, like, a reimagining of a story, and I was like, this project looks boring. I don't want to do this project. And so I was like, how can I change this project to make it completely my own? And so I flipped everything and was like, I'm going to make Nima. Everyone was like doing the same thing, and then you get to Ross. Everyone was like submarine, then mechs, and like cars and stuff like that, and then you get to this samurai woman. And I was like, this is so fun for me. I'm like trying to put myself into it. And so Nima came from a, like, I was all about aesthetics. She didn't have a true story, but I really love that red skin, white hair. She had an iconic look. She was a samurai, and I had so much fun making her. And so she was this character, and it was for this project only. And then I placed it online. I showed her to the world, and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, please, please make more of Nima. I was like, really? This like, you guys like this original character of mine? And so that feedback, like, people seem to really connect with her. And I was like, wow, just by looking at her, I thought, like, the response was amazing. And I felt like I had something. And so I shelved her for a little bit. Like, I've always wanted to blow her up into, like a book and a series. But I've shelved it and waited for the perfect moment to bring her back. And I feel like now, I feel like I've built a whole story for her. She also, they're the secondary main character now. She's basically fully fleshed out as a character, and I'm really excited to reveal more about her in the book.
Yeah, so I think that something that you touched on there is it started with a very visual for you.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
isn't surprising. Yeah. That's a visual artist.
Yeah.
But once you started like realizing that you wanted to build out her world and her more as a character, like, what was the process for you to do that? Because I think a lot of people start in a similar way of, like, they start drawing something and they see, like, oh, wow, this is gorgeous. Like, I love this.
Yeah.
You know, this is mine now.
Right.
Know? And they want to really build that out, but they don't know the next steps. They don't know how to go from that, like, drawing and that thing that they see into a full character.
Got it.
So how did you approach that for your character?
How did I approach this? I think it came to me over years.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things that I loved over the years, and then I kind of put it all together. For example, I love bus stops. I've drawn so many bus stops. I love cats. I've drawn so many cats. And then it's just like slowly kind of added together. And so Nima's story is a lot about like, like different world, and they're all connected through train stations and bus stops, and like the cats all roam around, and so through that that gave her an objective, like maybe she go to these world, etc. And so I like to world build before I get down to the nitty gritty detail, and so I feel like I'm more of a big picture artist, and so I would build out the world for Nima to adventure in, and then realize what is her objective, and then build the personality around that.
Did you find that some of the acting time that you spent and like those sort of things also helped you out with like?
Dude, I want to voice some of these characters. There's this guy named Atlas, who's the strongest man in the world. And he is so cool. I love him so much. I think people are going to relate with him. Atlas is just a bro. You know, he's an Olympian. And I'm really excited. Like, I want to, like, that definitely helped me. You know, like, my acting experience just helped me to just, like, do and not think. And so I was just, if you feel something, do it. React. And, yeah, so it definitely helped me, like, create like some of these characters and bring them to life. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love in your journey, even just going back to that.
Yeah.
Like everything that you mentioned all like were pieces that you later pulled in.
Yeah.
And just brought in, and like your entire journey so far has just really been like this very serendipitous thing put together by your drive that you have. Like your passion for this art and like this creating. It's so cool to see like you always had this vision and then you're like, oh, but this goes here and this goes here. And now you get to like kind of put it all together into one big thing, which is really exciting.
I'm so excited. I know. I really feel like this is the best work that I've ever done. And also this embodies who I am. Like I want to give them this and they can understand Ross. This is Ross. And I feel like it's a really unique platform for me to say, hey, this is me, and I'm super, super excited for it, yeah.
So we were chatting a little bit earlier about kind of the structure of how you're presenting this.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it is, I was thinking either full art book or full story book, but I realized, like, you know, that's just like examples of what you could do, but what do you want to do? And so I just fuse them together. So it's a half art book, half adventure narrative book. And so you're following Nima on the first chapter of her journey. And then when we're introduced to new characters, I pull out a spread of ideation for that character, who the character is.
That's so cool.
And then we jump back into the story. And then she's on the train and we meet a demon. These are demons. These are what demons about. She killed the demon, etc. And then she lands in another world, and etc. So I kind of like explore, let the viewer explore the world with Nima. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And are those pieces, do you find a lot of the stuff that you did when you were first ideating is making its way into those pages, into the finished pages? Or are you finding completely new things where you're like, okay, yeah, I've now built everything and I know exactly what I'm going to show?
I think it's changed a lot. Mm-hmm. Like it almost doesn't even replicate what I originally thought. But pieces of old characters are making their way now. I'm like, I know the perfect character. I can grab it in 2013. I'm going to bring him back in here. And there's this like really cool guy of like, just, I can't wait to show you him too. Yeah. So there's a big thing in my fan base that I only draw girls. It's like, Ross, please draw a guy. All you draw are girls. And so this book has like 13 guys. And so everyone can just, I just draw girls because I love the like a badass female character. I love just their shape language, their aesthetic, their personality. And now I designed and fleshed out like 13 male characters. So I am excited to ship on that.
That's awesome. I think that that's something really cool too, is you do take like so much interaction with your followers, mm-hmm. and the people that love your work. Mm-hmm. And you've taken that and like helped show off how you can really embrace that community, mm-hmm. and really pay attention to things like you're saying with the drawing male characters. Okay, here's male characters.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I really like this. Oh, here's how I can do that as well.
Right.
What sort of benefits do you find in like working in like an online community, mm. where like you have your YouTube followers, your Patreon patrons, and everything else? Like, what sort of interactions do you find there that are really beneficial for you?
I think it's just because I'm in my own world like 85% of the time. I'm like, this is what I want to do, this is my world, blah blah blah. And sometimes that's a good and bad thing, obviously. So looking at what other people have to say like brings you ideas that you don't even think of. It's like, oh wow, they thought about this, like, hey, I thought this was that, or you should have maybe blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, you're right. Sometimes they're better, but you know, with the general public, you get personalities all over the board. And so you just have to filter out what's constructive and what's good that you can kind of be inspired for. Yeah. So it's good for generating ideas.
Yeah. I think that what you just brought up too is really important. It's the internet's a place where anyone can say anything.
Yes.
And being able to kind of decide what's constructive or something that you can build off of a critique, mm-hmm. versus just someone who's trolling or had a bad day and is being negative.
Yeah.
Like being able to decide what to actually take to heart is important.
Mm-hmm.
What are some tips that you might have for people who are looking to like grow their art or their presence online with their art?
I have two answers to this, because everyone asks me this, like, hey Ross, we want to, you know, gain a following, or we want to like, you know, how do we kind of get there? And there's two answers to this. One is more of what I truly believe in, and one is actual practical numbers that you can do. I'll start with the numbers one first. What I learned most about growing my audience is engagement. I love engaging with my audience. Like, that's natural for me. I'm not forcing it. It's like, oh, okay, hey guys, da, da, da. Like, after every post, I'm on there 30 minutes talking to my diehard fans who set my Instagram on notifications. So there's like a few of them, and they answer right away. Oh my God, I love it. Ah, oh my God, I love it. And so I would interact with them. So engagement is a huge thing, because at the end of the day, it's all about connecting. It's all about the love and the art, and they genuinely love your art, and I want to like talk with people who really love my stuff. And so I love engaging with my fans. And also consistency is a really big thing. Like, if you post once a month, like, you know, or once a week, or three times a week. Just kind of keep it consistent so people know what to expect and stuff like that. And number three, like, trends always, like, hits. You know, that's the word itself. You know, people always try to go after trends. And so sometime before, when I try to build my audience, if, like, Frozen was coming out that week, I would draw my version of, like, a cool Frozen, cool Elsa. Mm-hmm. And so that will help a lot of, like, people see your art and get discovered, because they're searching for Elsa art that week, and so they see your version. They're like, oh, my God, I love that. And so that is definitely a big way to grow your audience. And then my other, what I truly believe in, is I don't think you should give – can I cuss?
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't think you should give two fucks about gaining followers or numbers. I hate that. I'm not about that. I think you should do exactly what you love and be passionate about. And then your followers will find that, and they will love it, and they will follow you because you are genuine. And I try my best to kind of draw things I love and things that make me happy. And I did it once for numbers, and I learned that that's very empty. It leads you to reaching, I don't know, 10,000 followers, and then you get like a, oh my God, I reached it. Now what? It's a very empty high. And so I don't even know how much stuff my likes get. I don't care about that. It doesn't matter. I think people look at the numbers too much, and they have a thing where they attach their value to the number of likes and like one of their art mm-hmm. gets. And it's like, it doesn't matter. If you love what you're doing, then just do it. And I try my best to relay that to anyone that I meet and want advice. It's like, the goal in your life and through your art is to express who you are and exactly what you believe in.
I agree a lot about, like, I'm head of social for DeviantArt, so like, I deal with all the trends and making sure that things are right. Set in specific ways. But I see so much more success, especially like, I don't know, you know, the 10,000 mark is such a unique spot too for different businesses and personalities, because once you hit that, it really does become, well, where's the passion for the people following you? Are they following you because of those trends?
Right.
And accelerating past that, you really need to show who you are. Like, 10,000 is kind of the uniqueness and, like, personality breaking point, where if you don't show that authenticity, people, like, that's, you know, you reach a max.
Yeah.
And being able to show off, like, this is me and this is what I care about and this is why, like, people follow me versus I want people to follow me. What can I do to be that?
Right.
Is so important. So it's really cool hearing you say that, because I think a lot of people can really take from that too. Because, I mean, you see so, I mean, social media is such in flux always.
Yeah.
Everything changes. The algorithm changes. The a new platform emerges.
Right.
You can't always count on knowing how to beat that.
Right.
But you can always count on, like, loving what you do.
And your voice. Exactly.
And so it's so much more important about the engagements you make and, like, the conversations you can have on those about something that you're passionate about to help other people find their passions too.
Oh, thank you.
Right? Like, I think that's, like,
for sure. I think my biggest joy in life, like, I've noticed, is when I can see my creative friends who are grinding and give them an opportunity for them to be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my friend Chris, he works at an editing company. He does is a powerlifting brand. And he likes it enough to be there, you know? But when I give him a job for me, it's like, hey, can you make a trailer for, like, Milo or something like that? He's like, oh, my God, yeah! And he would give me 150% of his effort and his love. And to give him that opportunity to let him be himself, do what he loves, is the most rewarding thing I can do. I'm giving people that opportunity to kind of just be in their own light. And I think that's the best feeling, I think.
And the art that he makes then shines as well. Like,
exactly.
The edit's going to be so much more fun and so much more alive.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So going back to the book. I'm sorry. I got a little distracted,
for sure.
But, like.
For sure.
So when does the book come out?
It's set to come out July of next year. I think the Kickstarter people will get it first, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it will be debut.
July 2020.
Yes, July 2020.
We never know when these release, right.
July 2020. Yeah.
Excellent. And the Kickstarter people get it first.
Yeah.
Awesome. For when you talked a little, sorry.
No worries.
You guys, a water break.
Yeah, for
one
sure.
Second.
Water. What's that? Here you go.
Or a part of all art. So, now that we're back from our little oasis. When you were doing the Kickstarter, you mentioned, like, it really blew up, and it was something where just beyond expectations. Mm-hmm. What sort of challenges did you find yourself facing at that point, and, like, how did you get past that? Like, when something is bigger than you thought, like, how do you go about it?
I think when, like, the final hour kind of, like, landed, I was like, whoa, I have to... The challenge was that it was, the Kickstarter was for me to have freedom to execute my world. I didn't have a book that's 80% done, you know, it was early stages, and I tried to relay that information like, hey, the book is not ready, but I just believe in me. Nima is the best thing that I'm ever gonna like create in this moment, and I will not let you down. And so I put an expected date of arrival of like December 2018, and the Kickstarter was like 2017 or something. And so people were like, "Oh wow, a whole year to get my book, a year and a half," and I do not want to rush it. And we're in 2019 now, and we had like some like mad backers and stuff like that, and like the challenges of like, you know, people like, where's my product, you know,
yeah,
where's my product, but I think the truest fans, like, I get the best emails from the truest fans who go, Ross, we know this is your baby, we know that you're not going to release anything like less than what you truly believe in, take all the time you need. And I'm like, oh, thank you for like understanding that, like, I do not want to release something I do not believe in, having my first debut book out there, have my character out there, and go, oh my God, I regret that. You know, I want to, it's like, this is exactly what I want to put out. I know you have to wait a little longer, but when you get it, it's going to be like exactly what you wanted more. And actually, it grew past like everything I promised. The book was originally 120 pages, and now it's 176 pages.
Wow.
And so I have to do all that work as well. But this is from me, like, in figuring out what it is. And so I think the challenge of that, like, was figuring it out. And so for my future Kickstarter, and for any advice for future people, maybe figure it out a little sooner to avoid all the challenges. But I don't regret anything I did. I think all the circumstances were there for me to get it to a place it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be really hard when you're working with an audience that has such expectations, too, mm-hmm. and really making sure that you keep true to yourself during those times. So one thing that I'd like to ask now is, what's a piece of art that you've done or a project you've worked on? I think I have a pretty good guess.
Yeah.
That really kind of you feel shaped your entire artistic journey. Like, what's one thing that, like, from that point you're like, okay, great. Like, I'm really proud of this. I did this, and now it's going here.
I think it was this piece I did in school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Journey.
Okay.
And I named it Journey because it marked a stamp in my journey. And I felt like I worked so hard to, and my skill sets have evolved, and the grind and the hours, the effort, the thousands of hours, and to see that piece made, I'm like, wow, I did that. Oh my God, I can't believe I drew that. And so it was excitement to see, wow, I can actually do it for a living. I'm not that bad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, I can draw. And so I named it Journey because it marked a stamp of my journey. Like, wow, like, all this whole entire journey brings me to here where I'm proud of what I made. And so that was that one piece that helped open my eyes. Like, it's possible. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Are you thinking of another one?
No, I was thinking that you were going to say the Nima piece. I thought for sure it would be first piece. Yeah. But I love this journey thing. I love that, like, you were so aware in that moment of, like, oh, this marks it now for me. Like, that's really cool. I don't think a lot of people have that, like, ability to, like, kind of pull themselves out and be like, oh, yeah, it's now. Like, the present is always so hard to discern what's happening and the impact that it will have. That's really cool that you had that, like, kind of foresight for it.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Okay, so now I'd like to hear, I want to talk about some other artists that you may have been inspired by or that you really enjoy.
Yeah.
So let's hear a couple artists that you really like.
I remember when I was in school, I loved this particular artist, and I usually give them a triple take throughout my life, because sometimes you like someone, and then later, like, I don't know if I truly did, or maybe, I don't know, like, you know, impulsive, I don't know. But this artist's shape language has always kind of stayed with me in my brain, like, wow, this is amazing. It's Clement Suave. I really love him. He died of cancer a few years ago, and it was extremely sad. But his art will live on. You know, it's absolutely really beautiful. I think most of these artists I really liked when I was like studying art and looking at their art and their decisions. And I think nowadays I can't really recall because I'm always on my grind. But back then, I really liked Cheeks. Cheeks was like very popular, and it's so cool, you know, he has all these, this world, and like I would like, oh my god, everything's so cool and awesome. I really liked Endling too. I was in high school, you know Endling, right? I was in high school, and I'm like, oh my god, look at all these characters. And so I think I responded to the whimsicalness of like world building, so I think I like had a taste of it early on, and I was inspired to kind of make my own stuff. And so I think those artists really at the very early, like 16-15 year old Ross was like fun cool inspiration.
I started on DeviantArt about 14 years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm really old.
You're not that old.
I'm super old. I went through and I was really into it. I was doing my graphic design work and followed all these people. And then I took a bit of a break. I pursued different parts of my career, and I wasn't really doing the art, so I wasn't on DA. And then when I started working here about 2 years ago, I was like, okay, time to bring back that profile. And I looked through my watch list, and I was like, oh man, like I was into like some like things at that time. Great, okay. And then like after being here for longer, I look back still. I didn't unfollow or unwatch any of those people. And I look back, I'm like, oh, I see exactly what I like loved at that time. Like, oh yeah, man, they really do this perfect. And like their lighting and all these things where you start kind of like reaching these cycles. And it's almost like fashion or anything else where it moves in those waves of like, oh yeah, I really appreciate this thing right now. It's cool to see. So it's fun to hear you say that same sort of thing. All right, so one thing that I want to talk about real quick is just your time on DA. Like, I know that, like, a lot of people, I think you made an account probably before you hit the right age,
Yes. Yes, I remember all the furry stuff. I think in middle school.
Okay.
Or elementary.
So you're supposed to be 13 to make an account.
I'm supposed to.
This is my, like, to catch an artist. I walk in and I say, sir, you weren't 13.
I think my username was like Lito Psycho 64 or something. I don't know. It was gone now.
And you had a chance to give a nickname to yourself. You could have been Lito Psycho.
Lito Psycho 64, yeah. No, I remember that. I think one of the first pieces, oh my gosh, I think I remember my first piece on that I uploaded to DeviantArt was I loved anime. And I did not know how they made anime. Like, how do you do this? And so I drew something on paper. I scanned it in and painted it on MS Paint. I'm like, is this how people do anime? And I would paint bucket the lines. And I'm like, this is ugly. And so I was like, but it looks great, I guess. But it, I was proud of it. So I uploaded it to my DA account. I don't know, probably like 3 views. One favorite, probably for my mom. I don't know. But that was, I think, my first piece. But I've changed username since then. I think I was Rossy Poo at one point.
We'll look it up. We'll go through the history.
and then it went to Roth Draws. And so I have been dabbling with DeviantArt like since pretty young.
And what's nice is like we've been able to bring you in a couple times since the Eclipse update and get to see some of that stuff too. How are you digging that?
I think it is the best change, I think. I love the black. It's simple. I've been at the old kind of site interface for like a long time. And I've been uploading for a while. And so to see the change, it's like, I think it's super stylish, super aesthetic, and like streamlined.
What I like is it's now at a place where DeviantArt as a company, and we talk about this on some of the more marketing focused things. It's at a place where now we can kind of grow with it. Like, you know, you need that base to really get going into the future, and it's a good place to be at, which is really exciting.
Awesome, yeah.
So one thing that I really love in your artwork that I want to hit before we go through any other stuff is I love your focus on, like, just the brightness of it. I can think of two words that that really tie everything in.
What is
really
it?
It's right on the tip of my tongue. Just seeing how... It's...
What is it?
Is it... Oh, are we going to say it at the same time?
I don't know.
Okay, let's on the count of three, we'll both say the two words that we're thinking.
Oh, my...
Okay?
No. I don't want to say anymore. You can whisper or something. Just say.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is it color dodge?
It is color dodge. Yes, it's color dodge. I use it in every single one of my paintings. I love it. And I did not expect it to be a thing at all.
That's the way it works.
Yeah,
it's organic.
Oh, my God. Like, my first video, I was showing people what it does, and I think people responded to me genuinely being excited about it. I'm like, guys, I have to show you this thing. I use it in every one of my paintings. It's called Color Dodge. And then the comments for the video were like, oh, my God, Color Dodge, Color Dodge, Color Dodge. And I'm like, what did I do? And so for the past few years, it's like, oh, my gosh. At expos, at Anime Expo, I'm like, hey, guys, what time is it? It's Color Dodge time. Oh, my God.
Crowd goes crazy.
It blew up. And I think... I almost think I know why. It's just like color dodge is just like bright, happy, loving energy that just makes everything awesome. And so if something is 150% awesome, how can you hate it?
Yeah, exactly. It brings so much just like genuine, almost like visual joy.
Yes. This is like, yes.
Which magic. I'm sure is great for the audio podcast. Sergio, you loving it? Just. We've got a Foley show coming up after this. And Adobe, if you want to license the official Color Dodge sound, it's just...
All right, exactly. The official sound. You heard it here.
Yeah. Sorry, Adobe Max 2020. We broke the news early. Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited for July to roll around so that we can finally get our hands on Nima. And again, where can people find you across the internet?
Yes, you can find me at Ross Draws on every single platform.
Makes it so easy.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Little Psycho 64 and Rossi Poo. You can find me somewhere. I don't know.
Well, everyone, thank you for joining us again. My name is Matt Buholtz. Please leave comments below, feedback, questions to ask in future things, or some of those rapid fire questions. Make sure to like. Subscribe to the podcast, please, so that we can continue making more of them. And if you could, leave a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. If you haven't updated, still iTunes. But thank you again so much for joining us, Ross. Yeah. And everyone have a good one. Bye.
Bye.